You know, I think this is this moment where, you know, progressive ideas are more popular than they've been in my lifetime. But on the other hand, so are white supremacist ideas. And that is playing out on real bodies in real time on the streets. It is a race against time.
Naomi Klein, best-selling author, journalist, columnist for The Intercept. Her latest book is out today. It's called No Is Not Enough, Resisting Trump's Shock Politics and Winning the World We Need. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We Can Listen, The Power of Being Heard. This is a monthly event series at the Old Church in Portland. This month, it takes place on Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. This month's program will draw on stories created through Portland Story Theater's Urban Tellers series and will feature the real, true stories of immigrants and refugees now living in Portland. Storytellers include Zara Abukar from Somalia, Lily Ningsa from Indonesia, Eva Rotter Johnson from Venezuela, and more. Again, that's We Can Listen, Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Liberty Ball Saturday, June 17th, starting at 6 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. The Liberty Ball features seven local acts sharing their music to support marginalized communities and critical social justice issues. Indigenous psych rockers Mascaras are headlining with support from Hungry Ghost, Blue Cranes, The Ghost Ease, and more. This is an all-ages family-friendly event, which will also have a raffle, palm readings, a photo booth, and more. Again, that's the Liberty Ball Saturday, June 17th from 6 p.m. to midnight at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yeah, democracy is coming. You know, I'm actually feeling better. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show here at KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial, and I want to hear a lot from a lot of people. Abe is not here because he's just not here, and I am, and I really feel I'm feeling a little bit better. However, I'm going to require everyone who calls, everyone who has any interaction whatsoever with Abe and I, to praise us. We want praise, just like Trump. We want, we want all of our friends and neighbors to say how wonderful we are and how divinely inspired we are and, you know, how God loves us. Because, after all, if Trump can do that, then anybody can. And I saw yesterday that Trump had his entire cabinet, I couldn't believe it, groveling and praising him and saying how sweet he is. And, oh, my goodness, this can't keep up. Even the most fascistic or the most naive supporter of Trump has to look at that and say, whoa, this is too creepy. So I'm feeling kind of... this can't go in the United States. People won't go for it. They're just, it's too creepy. So I'm feeling better. Now, The number call, 231-8187. And I'm going to try to do what I did a couple of weeks ago, which is to have as many people on as possible. Here's the deal with that. In order to make that, to facilitate that, I have to ask a lot of you who are going to call in. It's kind of simple, but it's very important. In journalism, I've said this before, but it's important. In journalism, who, what, where, when, how, and why are the crucial questions. They are the lead in any reportage, in any effort to talk about something. If you would, as a caller, and I'm not going to make you do it, but it'd be good. If you would, as a caller, kind of outline those things when you introduce what you want to say, and that allows us to have a very quick, and I don't want to shove people around here, but very quick opportunity for you to get your ideas out, and then other people can get their ideas out, and the whole process moves along much faster. It's actually, I can guarantee you, more entertaining. So think about that, and let's try to do that. Now, I also have an announcement. Brian Wilson will be speaking on a new program in Nicaragua on Wednesday, June 21st, I want to get this out, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Friends Meeting House. And I want to point something out. There is a huge number of independent efforts to improve the consciousness of the American people, to improve our own awareness, and, in fact, to build better programs. The fact of Trump, a monster in any sense, a fascist in every sense, is perhaps something to stir us up and make us ready to fight the good fight. And I don't mean that in a violent way, but rather a political way, and a way of doing and dealing with things that are going on. And I have a question to start out our show, and you don't have to stay with it, but I think it's kind of interesting. So the question is, what is Trump and his administration like? Is it more like the mafia? Is it more like he's a kind of an emir? Yeah, you know, leader. Is he maybe more like Mussolini? Are we facing a system that he would install more like Russia or perhaps Saudi Arabia? With a touch of this kind of incredible fascism. Remember, yesterday he lined all of his cabinet up. I assume he had some role in this. Maybe it was spontaneous. And beginning with his vice president, everybody praised him. And this was so North Korea-ish that it seemed to me almost a kind of an irony. But he, of course, Trump, does not see anything ironic about it. He really believes, and you can see him grinning there, that he's really this divinely inspired superhero who will save America from itself. And this is important because he believes it, because he's really, he's more than the showman and the fraud that we take him to be. He is actually the hyper madman who have made it into the presidency through a set of lies and coincidences and the help of the Russians. This is really real stuff, and it's really serious. He's a serial fabricator. He's obsessive. He's paranoid. He's narcissistic. He doesn't have any sense of American democracy. This is a president who is truly, I mean, it's unprecedentedly bad man. And I have to say this, the president of the United States is truly a bad man. He's a crook. He's a weird guy. And he's going to bring us down. In the face of that, however, I believe that more and more people, whether they're conservatives or liberals or leftists or even rightists, are beginning to recognize this fact and are beginning to turn away from this insanity. It hasn't yet affected the Congress, which is largely kind of modern Republican, which is not to say Republican in any sense of the old Republican Party, more fascistic. I know they're secretly hatching their various plans. They're going to secretly introduce their health care plan, which is going to move more than 20 million people away from health care. They're secretly planning to move money from the hands of ordinary people into the hands of the rich. All of this is really happening. But people just like you and just like me are saying, enough. we've got a taste of this. We can smell the foulness of it, and we're going to be turning our eye and our ear and our mind and our actions away from it. So what I really want you to do, if you will, is talk about what's going on. Talk about what you're feeling and thinking and seeing and acting on. And maybe in the course of that, we'll all feel a lot better for real reasons. And maybe we'll all be inspired. So I'm going to ask you to call 231-8187 and talk about what you're doing maybe. Talk about what you think should be done. Talk about how wrong I am, whatever. But I want to hear from you, and I want you to try to keep it brief. If we can keep calls under 3 minutes, we're going to have a hell of a lot more calls. Will you try that? I hope so. 231-8187. John, you're on the air. John? Well, maybe you're not. I guess not. No, John? I guess no, John.
Joe?
John, yes.
Yes.
Hey.
Interesting that Mattis was the only cabinet member who didn't make the praise jump. He instead just praised the American service people, men and women. But everyone else, as you did, were fawning over the dear leader.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's the thing. It's like North Korea, the dear leader.
And here are people. And what about Vice President Dunst or Pence? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I mean, the amount. These are videos that are at some point or another going to be shown whenever any of these people run for office. Showing them profoundly bowing to the dear leader. And it's going to affect them. Now, how they could have been brought to the point where they were willing to do that kind of thing, unlike Comey, I find that fascinating.
Well, it really is odd, isn't it?
It is. I mean, these are people who supposedly understand politics at some level. I mean, here they are at the highest level of government, and they're putting their entire future in jeopardy by the fact that they're aligning with this guy.
Well, each of them, each of them had to have a tongue extension surgery.
now you're getting into Stephen Colbert areas. The other point is that how can this 30%? How does he manage to maintain this 30% base? Are these people getting more? They're getting more and more and more information, but they're not dropping off. They're getting more intense about support for him.
Well,
is this the fascist constituency that builds the dear leader's mansion?
Well, it's a good question. I don't have an easy answer myself. I think that this is a combination of a very poorly designed educational system that doesn't, this is an irony because supposedly patriotism and so on is embedded in our curriculums in a not very good way, I think. But in fact, people don't know the Constitution. People don't know the real history of the United States. We have a cleaned up history. It doesn't deal with the slaughter of indigenous peoples. It doesn't deal with the enslavement of African peoples. It doesn't deal with the impoverishment of all kinds of people and injustices that have characterized the struggles of labor and others. So basically, many people, when things go bad, just get angry and they look for something that is easy to understand to explain their situation, not the more complex issues. And a simple example is the workers in the coal industry in Pennsylvania and Kentucky and areas and West Virginia, areas like that, where in fact the work has disappeared largely because of mountaintop removal and because coal is not the great fuel that it was pretended to be. Meanwhile, these people, isolated and angry, are essentially fantasizing that Trump can somehow restore old-fashioned deep mining in the coal fields, and that somehow we can continue with coal development, when obviously the technologies which are developed in all over the world, including China, by the way, of solar and wind power, it give us power that is much, much, much less harmful. And meanwhile, there is the whole issue of global warming, which Trump has never understood or embraced or allowed to come to the fore. And at the same time that that's going on, his Department of Interior and others are trying to destroy all the good efforts to preserve the natural landscapes in the United States that belong to all of us. So it's a scary situation, but it's also an opportunity-ridden situation. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 231-8187. What we're doing today is taking as many calls as possible, and I'll try to reduce my comments to maybe a couple of sentences at the most after you say something. Who do we got?
Roberta.
Hi, Roberta.
Hi. Well, I wanted to start off by saying that I just want to, in general, why should I care about this issue to the general public before I get to what the specific issue is? Why you should care about this is because this is directly an economic and political issue involving the government and involving huge amounts of money that are going towards this program that us taxpayers are paying for, that's being diverted from things that we really want and need. Okay, so to get down to what that specific issue is, I got involved with this issue on a very personal and local level. It has to do with animal dealers. They are people who go out into the community and steal animals, whether they belong to somebody or not, and they turn them over to the bigger dealers, who in turn ship them out of state, take them to laboratories, and where the animals are experimented on, tortured, and killed, and this operation involves many different entities, and it's a huge amount of money involved. And if you don't care about animals, at least care about where your tax money is going to. And most people are not aware that that this is happening, and they're even less aware that there are people like myself. I'm dealing with this on a local level, but I just recently came across an organization that is addressing this on a nationwide level. They're going after these people and are actually getting them put in jail.
Okay,
so I'm standing in between the pet owners and the animals on a local level, and now I found this organization. I would like to give the listening audience the website. And
sure, go ahead, do that.
Last Chance for Animals is the name of the organization.
Okay.
And the website is lcanimal.org, and there's a phone number, 888-882-6462.
Why don't you repeat the number?
888-882-6462.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Take care. All right, again, we're taking calls. We're looking for three-minute moments. We're hoping that you have the who, what, why, where, how, and so on ready and at hand. Remember, don't bury the lead. Okay, 231-8187, who do we got? Who? Oh, Pear. Hi, Pear.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
How you doing?
Hey, you're the greatest.
Wow.
Your only fault is your excessive humility.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're trumping me.
Oh, no.
Yes, anyway. I am great. Yes, we are making incredible progress. Yes, this is the largest and most powerful radio station in the world. Yes, we are winning.
I hope so. Anyway, my main point is that, you know, whatever you say about Trump, and people try to kind of get away from this, our electoral system put him in the White House.
Yes.
We put him there. Not you and me, because we didn't vote for him, but our system put him there. And we're trying to kind of shift the blame onto the Russians. Now we're saying the Russians are trying to discredit our system by telling the truth about it. It's very interesting. There's a guy on BBC, their political commentator, a guy named Rob Watson, was saying that he was told by some London businessman that the Russians don't need to discredit our system. We're doing very well at it ourselves.
Oh, that's sad, but possibly true. I think there is a real Russian involvement, though. I think that is a significant force.
Well, so far it's been hacking, which every nation hacks.
Yeah.
Okay, from hacking, then you go to leaking.
Yeah.
And when you go to leaking, then you go to, well, are they leaking true stuff or lies? You know, I mean, then you get in a whole... But so far, it's at the hacking stage, which we've done it ourselves, and we have leaked, and we have meddled in other elections, so we should have no... You look silly complaining about it.
Oh, well, I don't know about that part of it, but I understand what you're saying. It is certainly the case that the sense of honor and fairness and truth in politics is just being disappeared more and more quickly. What I'm hoping is that we're going to see, actually, Naomi Klein, who was on Amy's show just before our show, really talked about some of these issues. And I think that people are getting fed up, and I think that there's going to be a real rise up of people looking for social justice and reasonable thought around environmental change and so on. Anyway, thanks, Bear.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay, 231-8187. What we're going to try to do is persuade you, all of you out there, to make your comments, your thoughts known on the issue of the Trump. I can't resist the Trump. When he had his entire cabinet and the Vice President of the United States, all of them except the Secretary of the Military, all of them praising him and saying that he's accomplished more than any other president, except maybe FDR. That was so incredible, so unbelievable, so unaware, and yet so real. I love this guy. I have to say that Trump is the archetype of the bad fascist leader. And we got him, and we have to deal with it. And there's a lot of different ways that people are reacting, but not enough, and not often enough. And, you know, and there, I see a lot of activity. I'm going to say this because it's important, where people want to fight the police or fight some kind of symbolic power element or fascist element, rather than facing the issues and fighting directly on the theoretical and the real level about what's going on in the U.S. But I'm not sure I'm right. And I'm not sure that we all ought not to have a discussion of that. 231-8187. Have I driven everyone off? Is this possible? Is this the end of the whole thing? No, I'm really kind of puzzled about how, and this is really a real question, we face the reality of Trump and how we deal with it. And I know that it's maybe a little annoying or even possibly obsessive to be talking about this guy. But I think that he is the important, maybe perhaps the apotheosis of fascism in America. And I ask, you know, my big question is, well, what is he more like? You know, is he more like is he more like a mafia leader? I think my Trump vision is that he's a criminal, basically, that he's basically a mafioso, only not having any reference to the Italian tradition in Sicily, and that he's more like I don't know, the Saudis. You saw him being manipulated totally by the Saudi regime, which is waging war throughout its own landmass and around there, who oppresses women, which also is a force against democracy and freedom in that region. And he, Trump, loves that. It's just so natural. He really sees himself as an imperious leader, and he really, really believes that. And he really, really, really is, no kidding, honest to goodness, absolutely insane. And I think we need to understand he's a serial fabricator. He makes up stuff all the time. He's obsessive. He's self-aggrandizing. He's paranoid. He's narcissistic. It's scary. So fighting that involves two things, I think, basically. Well, three things. One, making yourself heard independently or collectively. In all kinds of environments. Secondly, it involves being able to make a critique of what Trump offers. And thirdly, pointing out what a crazy person he is. I think those are the three that are necessary. So let's take some more calls. And again, I'm going to urge people to make their comments as brief as possible so we can have as many people. Sonny, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. I think Trump is a walking crisis. I think he's extraordinarily insecure, dangerously insecure, and I think, of course, those who have spoken up so gloriously about him. They're programmed. They're not programmed. They're doing the boss's bidding. But I wanted to say something also real quickly.
Sure.
In reference to the terrible attack on Max, I just want to, number one, send out medicine to the young man who has come through that and is healing, and medicine also to the families of those who have passed on. And I'd like to say this real quickly, real quickly. It says, together three mighty hearts stood against those who oppose other races, those who oppose other religions, all religion or no religion. Together three mighty hearts stood and fought against intolerance, bigotry, cruelty, thuggery, and cowardice. Mighty hearts, powerful medicine. We thank you. We shall all try harder, care harder, love harder. And we should also, may I suggest, send medicine to the young man who's been returned to the United States from North Korea, who is in a coma, who was a prisoner of them, and we hope that he recovers, and we're in even more precarious waters now, and we've all got to get close together, and we've also got to batten down the hatches and put in some supplies, because we might be heading into war real soon, and we've got to buck up and stand together like our previous generations have done.
Well, thank you. That's that's pretty clear and pretty concise and pretty accurate.
Thank you. I'll let you go.
All right. Thanks a lot. Hey, I didn't want the show to pass without acknowledging the horrors that went down with the murder of so many people in that gay club in Florida. And I think that we have had and will be having events memorializing those people who were slaughtered and the craziness that produces that kind of an attack. You know, intolerance now doesn't just take the form of nasty talk or ugly signs or swastikas here and there. Now we begin to see it's let loose because of the Trump, I believe, because of the Trump appearance in the world, legitimizing racism, sexism, all manner of prejudice. We now are seeing the consequence of that in the leadership of Donald Trump. This guy is more than a creep. He's a horror. And his administration is dragging the legitimate elements of the right wing, and there are legitimate elements with whom I might disagree, dragging it into a place of filth and nastiness. I have to say that. And I want to hear from you. Maybe you want to disagree with me, but remember, keep it short, keep it succinct, and keep it on the topic. 231-8187. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Great. I wanted to just say that Trump is really a product of the society of the spectacle. The philosopher Guy Debord wrote a book called The Society of the Spectacle, which forecasts exactly what's happening now, which is kind of a general degradation of society.
Mm-hmm. Who was the philosopher there? I missed the name.
Guy, G-U-Y-D-E-B-O-R-D.
Okay.
And he predicted exactly what's happening now as a product of the marketing and violence culture. It's kind of a different scenario than 1984, but it's that pretty much exactly what's happening. As if you have a combination of violence, marketing, and appeal to base archetypes in the marketing field. And now you have Trump, who is kind of the basis of all the archetypes.
Well, I think he's the common denominator of all forces of fascist tendencies. And his egotism. And his trashiness, and this is not a class-wise criticism. His origins of trashiness have nothing to do with poverty or wealth, nothing to do with the class structure, except that the fact of property ownership gives him an undue amount of power, even though it was unearned, and even though it is unworthy, and even though it is dangerous to the survival of this nation as a healthy place. We can't repair the many needs that this country has for repair. We can't build the decent high-speed rail systems. We can't repair the highways. We can't deal with racism. We can't deal with sexism. We can't deal with the health care needs and so on of these people, our people, all of us, without dealing, unfortunately, now with this beautiful representation of American fascism. Beautiful in the sense of very clear-minded, ugly thing. So I want to hear from you. You may disagree with me. That's good, too. Try to keep your comments short, and please give us a call, 231-8187. Rebecca, you're next. Hi, Rebecca. Oh, we lost Rebecca. That's too bad. 231-8187. Who do we got? Oh, hey, this is your opportunity. People are running away. Maybe there's a very serious thing going on somewhere. I am really, really interested in having a discussion, not just about whether or not Trump is a Nazi or a fascist, not just whether or not he has a significant representative. He is a significant representative of something like 30% of American voters. I think very seriously, he is a con man. He's a showman. He's a faker. And he's entertaining superficially for almost anybody, unless they realize that, just like his TV shows, hey, this is real. This is a really stupid situation. Hey, Rebecca, you're back. Let's hear from you.
Hi. I just wanted to address the comment you made about combating the police force.
Yeah.
And the usefulness of that tactic. I guess I just wanted to mention my own perspective about I don't think you can separate talking about the military force of the United States and fascism.
Uh-huh.
I think that the police are the hand of the fascist agenda. And we can look at, like, the protests that happened on Monday 2 weeks ago and see that when people gathered to try and interrupt white supremacists from furthering that agenda, Trump's agenda, essentially, the police were there to directly support and defend those white supremacists at the expense of tear gassing those who would interrupt that. And through that, people were chanting ACAB and stuff like that.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have to say I've been rather remiss. I haven't gone to a demonstration since the May Day presentation. I am torn on this issue. Here's why: the police are always and forever the representative of the established order. They will always enforce the rules, whether they're fascist or liberal or whatever, of whatever government is in power. And they are limited training, and not taught to create a situation where there's less confrontation. They're always taught to be confrontational and to use their enormous weapon power. My issue about this is it's strategic. If, and I want you to imagine this, if everybody in the park under attack had sat down, suddenly were sitting down, what would have happened? Would the police have continued to use their flashbangs? Would they have continued to poison people with their gas? Would they have used their truncheons? Well, it becomes very much a challenge to their sense of humanity, because they really are real people. And it would have been a very interesting situation. Now, it could have worked very badly, and a lot of people gotten hurt. I don't deny that. But we need to have more creative activity in dealing with this. The police, again, I agree with you, are the representatives of the oppressive system. But they're also people, and they're also humanity, and they're also aware. They're not all stupid. They're not all unaware. So being able to create a situation where they have to search within their hearts, within their consciousness, and where they are facing a nonviolent resistance for sure, but nonviolent, can often have more effect and be more effective in every way than a running, fighting thing. Now, that's a tactical argument, okay?
go ahead. Having been there, I want to...
Well, I wasn't there either, so I have to be careful.
Yeah, yeah. Having been there in Mace, I guess I want to put it out there that, first of all, there was no violence present when the tear gas canisters were fired. That whether it's standing or sitting, the actions were nonviolent, and sitting down wouldn't have actually changed what was happening.
You may be right. Again, because I was not there, I can't argue with that.
Yeah, and then also, I think that, like, something that's amiss is talking about who are these police officers, and are they as liberal as or if not liberal? I hear you using the word stupid, and I'm not sure what that may mean in terms of their thought processes and stuff. But it's well known by folks who are doing deep research, Antifa folks who are doing deep research into the threads that the white supremacists have within the foundations of our legal systems, and not all our police officers aren't on the side of Trump and white supremacists in wanting to further a white America agenda, in which case, like, sitting down isn't, again, is nonviolence. Like, I guess I think of that image at Standing Rock of the indigenous resistance holding up mirrors to the riot cops to show them their humanness and who they are in front of these people who were acting in a nonviolent with nonviolent tactics. Mm-hmm. And those people were still, aggressed upon heavily by the police.
Well, both the police and the private army that was brought in there. But you're absolutely right. And I'm not sure. Let me be clear. I'm not the profound wise guy or anything. I'm not sure what works in this weird fascist time. But I do know one thing. When we, without thinking about our own propagandistic significance, put ourselves in a position where we can be dismissed by the incredibly stupid media in this town and elsewhere, we set ourselves up for a losing situation. Now, when I say, nonviolence, I don't mean that it shouldn't be creative. I don't mean that it couldn't be running around. But I do think that when we directly confront the force of the police with our own force, we lose. We just don't have the skills. We don't have the power. We don't have the weaponry. We don't want the weaponry. So that's all I'm saying.
I think, again, the piece there is that, are people confronting the police with violence, or are they actually confronting white supremacists with violence? Are they confronting white supremacists nonviolently? When it's like, once the police get involved, it's like the police were the ones targeted or something, and that's not the point.
Oh no, I don't think that at all.
Yeah. So, anyways, just to sum up the position that I'm wanting to say is just that I think that dissecting the validity of Black Bloc or anarchist or Antifa distaste for police is distracting from. Is actively creating barriers to people who would work together.
Uh-huh.
And that I guess I wish to see a point when people are going to realize that it's more worth working with these people than defending the hand of the fascists.
No, I think you're right. And I think, I react when... it's a purely a tactical question for me. There's a moral issue, of course, but it's more tactical. When you're dealing with superior force, people who are armed and carrying weapons and using flashbangs and so on, you're at such an enormous disadvantage that you have to be able to figure out a way to exploit that disadvantage rather than to show courage against it. But, again, I was not there. What I saw looked to me like the police had been given license to attack a large number of people, 1,000 people or more, for no real reason. And I think that was terribly, terribly unfair and terribly wrong. And, of course, the other element here is that the local media is apparently taking stupid lessons or
or taking money, and rather than really thinking about and using their intelligence to deal with the issue. And it's very disappointing. And I'm worried about this because the average person who watches the average news show on television is absolutely unaware of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And is that because of stupid people producing media, or is that because there's a propaganda machine?
I think it's both. I actually think it's both. I think that in essentially getting the training to be on the air, I've had a little experience with this, getting the training to be on the air, to be a representative essentially of used car salesmen and so on, is very much like getting to be a police officer. You're not getting the real story. You're not getting a real analysis. And you're not caring about what reality is. You're simply going with a surface presentation. The lack of depth, the lack of intellectual honesty that we see in the media is frightening, really frightening.
Well, I think my 3 minutes are up, so I'm going to get off the phone.
Well, I really appreciate your call. I think this is a dialogue we all need to have. Thanks very much for calling. 231-8187. Hey, LJ, I haven't heard from you for a while.
Hey, Joe, I decided to give my mouth a rest for a little while. Anyway, Joe.
Sorry, go ahead.
Joe.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah.
You are the greatest.
Oh, well, thank you. I want everybody to begin their conversation with me by reminding me of how great I are.
Joe, you dance like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
Would that were so.
Yes. Okay, so...
Come on, get to your real thing. Stop complimenting. It's embarrassing.
Just a couple of really quick points.
Okay.
All right. We, the American people, are being treated to one of the best reality TV shows
ever. Right.
Ever, ever, ever.
Yeah, but it's going to end in a war. Anyway, go ahead.
And anyway, what's going on, Joe, in my estimation, is that the ruling class always has a way of finding a way to distract us and titillate us. So we're not thinking about the real issues that are facing all of us.
Right.
Vis-a-vis health care, education, crumbling infrastructure, etc.
And social justice. Let's not forget social justice. We have a racist.
Yeah,
we have a racist system.
All of that.
And a system that is hurting working
all
people.
All of that. Now, just a quick change of subject.
Uh-huh.
You know the event, It's All Good in the Hood?
Yeah.
I think it's next Saturday. Now, I understand that the organizers of this event have received death threats via the mail.
Well, I don't know about that. Is that true?
Yes, that is the fact of the matter, Joe.
Huh.
And so I am urging all of our KBOO family to please show up at this event. You can find all the information you need, I guess, on your geek machine. And I think it's next Saturday. I think it's in a park in North Portland.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's get someone.
Russell and Flint.
Yeah.
I think I'm correct, but please check me out.
Well, really, anyone who has the exact date, I've been to that a couple of times, and I think it would be really good if somebody could make sure that we have the right time and the right place.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you.
And anyway, please show up en masse, bring your love, and please let us show once and for all the brown shirts that we're in this. That we stand in solidarity with all of the communities here in Portland.
I thank you for the call, and I agree with your sentiment. And I hope if we got the wrong time and the wrong place, somebody will call in and make it clear. I apologize for not having that material ready today. All right. Thanks a lot for the call. 231-8187. Conch, how are ya?
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Pretty good, man.
Hey, Yeah, Good in the Hood. Let me just look that up real quick.
Please.
You know, it's not just organizers of events who are being intimidated. It's there's actually Democrats running for office, mayor, representatives, whatever, who are getting death threats. There's coordinated intimidation going on these days, and it includes people stalking their families.
Really?
Yeah, really, really crazy stuff. So that's something to worry about. Okay, good in the hood. Yeah, everybody needs to show up in force. This is a good idea. June 23rd to 25th, 2017, Lilith Albina Park. It's at Russell Street in North Flint. So yeah, really close to really close to Williams, really just up the street from the Max Yellow Stop, down there by the breweries. It's really good. Just wanted to follow up about the anti-white supremacist rallies. I am not convinced. I was there. There was a good KABU presence there. I was mostly hanging out with the labor folks and the folks by City Hall, but I just happened to be walking through Chapman Park at the point where the big announcements were being made about the police moving in. This is now an illegal gathering, et cetera, et cetera.
How the hell can they make it an illegal gathering in a public park?
Well, the claim was that there was a brick thrown, that an officer was assaulted. There's certainly no photographic evidence. There's nobody who came forward and said, I saw this. It's completely a police claim, just like the phantom Molotov cocktail at the May Day parade.
Right. I saw things being thrown, but there were no Molotov cocktails. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, well, the Pepsi cans. The Pepsi cans. But I'm not convinced that the... honestly, that sitting down would have changed anything. Chapman Square was just—it was the closest place to where the white supremacists were meeting. It was front-lined by the Black Bloc and the anti-fascist brigade, and they just—the idea was they just needed to be moved back. The police just were going to move that crowd back as the gathering started breaking up. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that I don't think people are talking about enough. Which is apparently a Homeland Security officer finishing basically a citizen's arrest by a member of the pro-Trump crowd. Mm-hmm. So pro-Trump crowd guy chases somebody who's not actually being violent. They're apparently in a verbal face-off. Security from the so-called security, basically paramilitary security, from the white nationalist gathering, tackles this guy. Police comes over, Homeland Security comes over to finish the job, and asks another person who they apparently have never met, who is helmeted, who is a so-called security for this group, for the three percenters, to assist him with his handcuffs.
Yeah, so, I know about that. That's really incredibly disgusting.
This is well, it's not only incredibly disgusting. Have you read On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder?
Uh-huh.
If people Google 20 lessons from the 20th century, number 17. I'm going to just give you number 17 real quick.
Okay.
And you can move on to somebody else.
Oh, well, say his name again.
Thomas Snyder.
Yeah, right. Okay,
and,
thank you.
The book is called On Tyranny. And 17 is, watch out for the paramilitaries. Watch out for the paramilitaries. When the men with guns who have always claimed to be against the system start wearing uniforms and marching around with torches and pictures of a leader, the end is nigh. When the pro-leader paramilitary and the official police and military intermingle, the game is over.
I'm really glad you reminded us of that. By the way, I've heard of this book, and I understand it's very good, and I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, and
at my local bookstore.
In these times, there's an article where they just list the 20 lessons.
Ah.
And this is really important. I mean, Portland needs to demand it. Okay, so it's a federal officer who mm-hmm. cooperated with this, basically unvetted supposed security person from the three percenters. But Portland needs to demand an investigation from the feds about this, because this was happening in our town to our people.
You're absolutely right. I'm appalled by a lot of the things about this. The overreaction of the police, the fact that the mayor has essentially given them carte blanche to do all kinds of illegal and questionable things, the movement of everybody out of that park because somebody allegedly did something is so outrageous. And so, you know, if somebody does something illegal, the police certainly have a right to go and find that person and arrest that person for doing something that's dangerous or harmful. That's not what happened. They used a tactic which essentially blames everybody for the behavior of possible behavior, I might add, of one or two people. It's outrageous. Anyway, I'm glad you called, man. I really appreciate that. And I know a little bit about this book. The 20 Lessons book is really worthwhile. You know, a lot of us can't afford to buy books, but the library has it, and I think that we all need to understand what exactly is going on. This is a true fascist effort, and we are in a true crisis. And the way Trump will be going, if he gets effectively stopped, will be to declare war. You know, suddenly we'll find ourselves in a war in the Middle East, or we'll find ourselves in a war with North Korea, and or we'll find ourselves, and it goes endlessly like that. It's really serious. The federal lands are being stolen from the American people. The inability of this government to rationally deal with the energy crisis. I mean, it's just endless, and it's very scary. And all of us should feel empowered to make a struggle that gives us a true democracy. It's an opportunity rather than just a crisis. Anyway, I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe.
Hey.
I just want to continue on a thread that was a couple callers back, I think, with Rebecca.
Yeah.
But essentially that, you know, and your comments about tactics, and also share a memory from a few years back. But essentially, the media, the mainstream media, is always going to, they're always going to come down on whatever image really is the best example of their narrative of how unruly people are at these protests. And a few years ago at the Occupy, at Cherry Trunk Plaza, there was a scene where there, of course, it was getting rowdy and there was people partying and there was people like with bottles of liquor hanging off the stag in the middle of the square.
Mm.
And lo and behold, the next morning, it was on the cover of the Oregonian and on the cover of the Willamette Week. So anyways, you know, moving forward in protest, you have to think about how you compose yourself and how you're holding yourself in the public eye, because, you know, those are the images that are going to get broadcast around, you know, whether it's, you know, somebody throwing a Pepsi can or being violent, you know, people, the media often is going to show your worst face, because that's what they think is going to sell.
Well, so. And you're right. And it's difficult. First of all, there's the residual and actual and legitimate anger of people, oppressed people reacting to oppression. That's number one. Number two, we don't have, at this point in our history, a strong tradition of resistance that is nonviolent. We should and we could, but it's not there right now. It's not, as our lead song often says, it's not exactly there. But people people are wising up. A sense of self-discipline is what's really necessary, and dignity is really important, and the sense of gravitas in the struggle. But on the other hand, we need spontaneity and joy. It's hard. It's very difficult. And I tend to get very upset because I come out of a long time ago tradition of nonviolence. It doesn't mean that that's the only tactic, and it doesn't mean that it isn't right to stand up and fight. But you have to really choose your time and your place and realize that what you're doing isn't just your appearance and your opposition or whatever. It's part of a greater struggle with an enormous propagandistic impact. Because most people really get their, to the degree they get the news at all, they probably get it from the 5 o'clock news. And the rule there is if it bleeds, it leads.
Sure. But, you know, it's also important to maintain a dignified persona out there, and while being joyous and engaged, I think is important to whatever struggle that, one is engaged in. But also just kind of talk more about that image. Yeah, so guy hanging upside down off the Staghorns with a "We Are the 99%" with a bottle of liquor in his hand, you know, it doesn't really play well for the movement.
No, and it also is a little scary. If the 99% is drunken and willing to hang on statues rather than struggle for peace and justice, that ain't going to work.
Sure, and I just thought that was sad, and it didn't help out the movement.
Right.
That's the kind of imagery that that undermines the movement. So yeah. Anyways, I'll just listen off the air. Thank you so
sure.
much, Joe. I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, no, and I want to emphasize something really important. I am in no position, nor do I think I should be, saying what absolutely ought to happen. I am provocative, I hope, and putting forward ideas that I believe are correct. I wasn't even there for this thing at the park and so on. So I am not in a position to say exactly what should have happened or what did happen or didn't happen. The only thing I am clear about is a park was cleared by the authorities for no really legitimate or apparent reason. And this is becoming kind of a leitmotif of the movement and the struggles at this point. And it's gonna drive away families, it's gonna drive away ordinary folks, and it's gonna turn off people and not have them be paying attention to the terrible reality of the growing fascist tendencies in our society, led by the neo super fascist clown, Donald Trump. This is a really, really bad guy. Let's hear from you. 231-8187. Paul, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, is this me?
Yeah, yes, you.
What's up, Joe? Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to piggyback on a couple things real quickly, and I'll get off the air and let somebody else call. First of all, I think the tactics of the police the other day in Chapman Square, the things they did were not an accident. I think they were pre-planned. They were coordinating with the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, as was called for by the head of the Republican Party here in Multnomah County, which I think is an important point. He asked them to come. They would have come anyway, but he specifically put out a call for the Three Percenters and the Oath Keepers groups that the ADL is called, you know, violent extremist paramilitaries who were there out here with their guns. Those are the kind of people we're dealing with. They're far right fascist extremists, period. And they're dangerous. And they were working all day with the Homeland Security and with Portland Police. And you could see it over and over again. I was there with the Antifa and the Black Bloc, and I was going between the Union side on the East side also, which we're constantly being intimidated by the groups of Proud Boys coming through, which are street fighters from Southern California with their baseball helmets and whatnot. And finally, towards the end, I think they had, I'd go so far as to say that they wanted to coordinate a way for the crowd to leave. And so they took out the most volatile, in their perspective, portion of the crowd. They attacked the crowd. You could see more and more activity between the Three Percenters and the Homeland Security, and I think they precipitated an attack on the crowd. There were no bricks thrown, good Lord. And they attacked the crowd on their own. That was their call. And they pushed them back, and people did sit down, Joe. The Antifa did sit down. They sat down with shields, and you could see the projectiles hitting against the shields. If you want to sit down in the midst of that barrage, my hat's off to you. Go for it, man.
I think you're making a good point.
Munitions. And the munitions that they've used in Portland have been, according to the ACLU, have been more than any other city since the start of the Trump administration. That's what we're dealing with. And we need to point that crap out. And we got to take it to Ted Wheeler and the city council. Those are the people who are in charge. Ostensibly in charge. I mean, Ted Wheeler is the charge of the police, and we've seen more repression against protests than probably anywhere else in the country since the beginning of this, and that's on Wheeler.
You know, I think you're right.
That we can affect change on that. That's who we need to go after, not necessarily the police. The police are just, the police are the police.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But I absolutely do know what you mean.
What's that?
I say I'm agreeing with you. You're okay. Right.
Yes. I think we can affect change. We need to go after the people here. We need to go after the people in power. We'd love to get these people out, obviously, but in the meantime, we need to put pressure on them to stop doing this, because it's just going to get worse, and it seems to have been getting worse.
I think you're right, and I appreciate the call, man.
Okay, thanks, man.
Take care. Hey, this has been very interesting. We've got about a minute left. Can we get one more call in? Edie, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for the wise and right and clear, well said last two conversations. I was going to make some of the same points. And thank you, Joe, for your caring, your devotion, your courage, your intelligence, your research, your humor, and your perseverance.
Wait a minute. Are you turning into like a Trump cabinet member?
Nope. I'm sincere.
Okay, thank you.
Way. I've never flattered or manipulated anyone successfully in my life, and I've never lied.
I'm just teasing you. Go ahead.
So what I wanted to also say is that I was a peacekeeper at City Hall, most of the time at 4th and Madison, watching everything.
Uh-huh.
And I heard a CNN live radio guy hysterical, and they vandalized the restroom. I saw it. Now the police have to take him because that's criminal activity. And it's being well said. I said, are you sure it's not police infiltrator exaggeration? Oh, really? You know, and he just went away from it because he didn't want that overheard on the radio. So afterwards, I went down there. This is just minutes after the police have cleared that area.
Yeah.
And there was no missing bricks. There was no chipped brick. There was no gouged brick. There was no damaged mortar. There was no red clay on the ground where a brick hits the ground. There was no crumbled brick. There was nothing showing, you know.
So in other words, there was no brick thrown.
I don't know that. I just know there was no evidence of a brick removed from okay. any part of the building and no brick hitting the ground.
Okay, I have to close off because we're out of time, but I really appreciate your call on all
and
kinds of levels.
And I was watching, and I saw things thrown from the police towards the protesters, but not the other way.
Okay, well, I'm really glad you called, but we're out of time, and I want everyone to stick around on KBOO, where the truth tends to be more a common thing than other media, and the greatest music programming in the region.
It's coming through a crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet.
Good morning, KBOO listeners. You are listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Tave, and I'm going to be here until noon today. You were just listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Show, and now at 9, coming up after these announcements, will be Alternative Radio. Author and political commentator Thomas Frank speaks on the country that voted for Trump. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on Stage and Studio, D. May Roberts